Obadiah, verses 8 through 11. Shall I not in that day, saith the Lord, even destroy the wise men out of Eden, and the understanding out of the mount of Ephraim? And thou, mighty men of Teman, shall be dismayed to the end, that every one of the mount of Esau shall be cut off by slaughter. For thy violence against thy brother Jacob, shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. In the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captive his forces, and foreigners entered into his gates, and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast with one of them.
Have to get this all unwound. So we've been spending our time this month studying surveys of some of the minor prophet books, and this morning we are going to look at the survey of the book of Obadiah. The book of Obadiah is definitely the shortest of the 12 minor prophets, and possibly the oldest of, in terms of when it was written. It has one dominant theme, which you could have picked up from Brother Bragg's reading of Obadiah verses 8 through 11, and that is God's judgment upon Israel's relatives, the nation of Edom, which were the descendants of Esau. Normally, when we do these surveys, we have to really do a lot of condensing because we're trying to deal with chapters, like Hosea has 12 chapters, and many of the minor prophets are considerably longer than Obadiah. So one of the things that allows us to do here is spend a little bit more time and more detail about the message of Obadiah, because it's just this one chapter of just a few verses. In talking about the book of Obadiah, the author is named Obadiah. And in the book of Obadiah itself, in the introduction, there is no other information given. In some of the minor prophets, the prophet says he's the son of somebody, or gives some hint as to who he is or where he's at. And that is not the case of Obadiah. There is no other information about his family. There is no identification of the king that was ruling when he gave his prophecy. So Obadiah is Obadiah. Now, what is interesting is there are 13 different people named Obadiah in the Old Testament. So if you get interested and you go looking, what you'll find with commentators is that they will try to connect the Obadiah, the author of the book of Obadiah, to one of these 13 other Obadiahs, or 12 other Obadiahs. Obadiah, the author, would be the number 13. So they try to do that, and the 13, the 12 are not necessarily... some of them are pure incidental references of a person's name and a list of names. As we're going to talk about in just a minute, there's also some discussion about exactly when Obadiah was written. So the position that a scholar takes on the date of the book also affects which one of the Obadiahs he tries to connect the Obadiah who wrote this book to. However, looking over the entire list, there are four that are very real possibilities. You can't say from the book of Obadiah that this is the author, but there are four that it would make sense that they could be the author. So we'll talk about that and just briefly. The best possibility, I think, is the officer that's in Ahab's palace who hid God's prophets from Ahab and Israel. That's in 1 Kings chapter 18 and verse 3. Because that Obadiah was, if nothing less, a friend of God's true prophets. and possibly one of them. The second one is in 2 Chronicles 17, Jehoshaphat, the king of the southern kingdom, Judah, in his reformation to get people interested in keeping the law after the northern kingdom has gone off and split off, sends out some officials to teach all of his citizens the law. And one of those is named Obadiah. So that is also a person of the name who is known to be a teacher of the law. A little bit later in 2 Chronicles chapter 34, when King Josiah, the last king, good king of Judah, takes upon the task of completely refurbishing the temple and restoring the law and the feasts and so forth, one of the people that he commands to be the overseer of the project of redoing the temple is named Obadiah. And then there is, for those who take a real late date of the book of Obadiah, there is a priest during the time of Nehemiah, mentioned in Nehemiah 10 and verse 5, who was a teacher of the law and could be connected in some way. But the fact is Obadiah, in the book of Obadiah, doesn't give us any reason to know that he's any one of these four, and possibly he is a 13th Obadiah, and the only thing that he did that we know about is write this book. The second thing that comes into play here is the date. As we mentioned just a minute ago, Obadiah does not tie his prophecy to the reign of any specific king of Israel or Judah. And a lot of the prophets did that. They said, someone was the king in Judah, and this was the king in Samaria at the time that they wrote that. Obadiah doesn't do that. The only historical hint in the book of Obadiah that can affect the dating has to do that Obadiah actually makes a reference to the invasion of Jerusalem. And in fact, part of the condemnation, as we'll see as we go through this, of the nation of Edom, is that when people were fleeing from Jerusalem because of this event, they blocked their way. They tried to cut them off and keep them from escaping. Obadiah makes reference to this invasion. There are four incidents in the Old Testament that could meet this description. Right after the kingdoms divided during the reign of Rehoboam, approximately 926 BC, Pharaoh Shishak of Egypt attacked Jerusalem and plundered Solomon's temple. Now, so there is a possible reference to an invasion. The reason why that is probably not what Obadiah has in mind is because at that time, Edom was still a part of the kingdom of Judah. David had subjugated them, and Solomon had made them a part and had ruled over them, and they were not a separate country at that time. They actually rebelled later during the reign of Rehoboam and got their independence sometime after that. And Obadiah treats Edom as an independent nation in this writing. And so that one was probably too early to be the invasion that Obadiah had in mind. A little bit later, during the reign of Jehoram, 848 to 841 BC, the Philistines and their allies invade Jerusalem and loot the palace, the king's palace. This one is more of a possibility since Edom had already revolted and was an independent nation at this time. The third invasion is in 790 BC, and this actually is probably not it, because this invasion of Jerusalem was by King Jehoash, the king of Israel, their brothers. And Obadiah in verse 11 refers to the invaders as strangers. So it'd be very unlikely that he would call the Israelites strangers. They were actually brothers. And then the fourth and final one is the one that everybody knows, and that is in 586 BC, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, destroyed Jerusalem and carried the children of Israel into captivity. Now, I'll tie the two things together. If somebody believes that the invasion that Obadiah is talking about is Nebuchadnezzar's, then they're likely to try to identify Obadiah with that priest during the days of Nehemiah, because that's after the restoration from the Babylonian captivity. The problem with that is its lateness. I believe the two most viable dates are the one during the reign of Jehoram that would have made Obadiah the earliest of the minor prophets. It would have made him a contemporary with Elijah in the kingdom of Israel. And that would make it the earliest of those prophets. There are conservative scholars, by the way, like we said a couple weeks ago when we talked about Joel. The dating controversy here is not a matter of liberal theology versus conservative theology, an attempt to deny predictive prophecy. It's just based upon this historical evidence. I personally think the earlier date, the one during the reign of Jehoram, is probably it for a couple reasons. One, Obadiah, in talking about the invasion, does not mention Babylon or Nebuchadnezzar. And every other of the minor prophets that talks about, even the major prophets, that talks about the destruction of Jerusalem mentions Babylon by name. So if this was about Babylon, why did Obadiah not say it? And the second reason is that Edom was also conquered by Babylon. And so Edom would have been in the same bondage of that later captivity as would have been Judah. And the way this reads, as you look at the prophecy, the feeling you get is that Edom is still existing and is still an enemy of the children of Israel and has not been judged itself at the time that Obadiah writes this message. A lot of introductory things. The third thing that needs to be mentioned is, of course, the relationship, the historical relationship between Israel and Edom, why they were such enemies. And that background goes all the way back, of course, to Isaac. Edom is the nation that is composed of Esau's descendants. And we know from the story of Isaac and his two sons that even before they were born, God chose Jacob, the younger, over Esau to be the one that he would build the nation of promise from. And we know, as we look at that story, that there was a lot of conflict in that. Esau sells his birthright to Jacob, a very stupid, foolish, short-sighted thing. And then Jacob turns around and steals the blessing that Isaac would have given Esau as his oldest son from him by deception. And they become enemies. And there was animosity between them. Now, in the case of Jacob and Esau themselves, after Jacob spends 21 years in the house of Laban to get his wives and comes back to the land of Canaan, Esau and Jacob personally reconcile. But that doesn't change the feelings. And Esau's people became an established nation while the Israelites were in the Egyptian bondage. And the nation of Edom already existed. And in fact, when the children of Israel were traveling from Egypt to the land of Palestine, to Canaan's land, Edom refused to allow them to come through their territory. And because they were Israel's brothers, God told them, don't fight them, go around them. And the relationship between the two related countries was never peaceful. And in fact, during the reigns of David and Solomon, Israel subjected Edom to their rule and made them a dependent state. And so the result of that in actual history that comes to Obadiah's message is that they were not in a harmonious relationship, and Edom sided whenever they had the opportunity to with Israel's enemies. And so that brings us then to a quick look at the message of Obadiah. And as we said earlier, it's only about one topic, and that is what God is going to do to Edom and what God is proclaiming against Edom. There's actually two major subjects in the short little book. And the first 18 verses is God's declaration of judgment against Edom for the way in which they have treated their brother Israel. The second part is the promise of God to restore Israel. And in verses 19 through 21, when that promise is given, what is incorporated into that is that Edom will be incorporated into the restored Israel. Now, a lot of people don't realize this. And for instance, when you go to the New Testament, to the story of Jesus, Herod is the king over Israel. But Herod is an Edomite. By the New Testament times, the Romans called that area Idumea rather than Edom. But the whole line of Herod kings were not Israelites, they were Edomites. And it was all incorporated into one country. And so that finds its prophecy in verses 19 through 21 and its fulfillment in the days of Christ. So the main message, though, is the judgment upon Edom. And so Obadiah declares that judgment. In verse 4, he says, though you build high like the eagle, and Edom is a mountainous area, and though you set your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. And so God declares the judgment that he is going to bring Edom down from their prideful place. And it was a literal fact used as a figurative point. They built their cities on the mountaintops, so they were high, and he used that to refer to their mental attitude and their haughtiness, and said, God's going to bring you down from your mountain. And then the bulk of this first section is really God stating through Obadiah his reasons for judging Edom. And there are five of them. First of all is their own violence against their brothers Israel. The fact that they did fight. And if you go through the Old Testament, there are a number of incidents where there's treachery between the people of Edom and the kings of Judah. And so there's a history of violence there. The second is that when others attacked Judah, they refused to help Judah. And a brother should help a brother. And so God just basically says, you didn't act the way a brother should act when your brothers were under attack. And thirdly, you actually helped the enemy. Rather than helping them and defending them, you helped the people that were attacking them. You rejoiced in their troubles. And finally, you tried to cut off their way of escape. When they were fleeing from their attackers, you tried to block them so they could not get away. And so for those five things that are enumerated in the book of Obadiah, God is going to bring judgment upon the nation of Edom. Then Obadiah in verses 15 through 18 describes the nature of God's judgment that he's going to bring on Edom. He says he is going to treat Edom the way they had treated Israel. But his judgment upon Edom is going to be more severe than the way Edom has mistreated their brother Judah. In verse 18, then the house of Jacob will be a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame, but the house of Esau will be as stubble, and they will set them on fire and consume them, so that there will be no survivor of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken. Israel and Judah were going to be punished, and they were going to be taken into captivity, but the promise for them was they would be restored. And the ultimate punishment, and understand the word ultimate, I'll get to that at the conclusion, is that the people of Edom are ultimately going to be all wiped out. There is going to be no more descendants of Esau in the world. And then we come to this last part, which is the restoration of Israel will incorporate Esau. And that's in verses 19 through 21. And the first it says is that the south will possess the mountains of Esau. The south is another way the Bible designates the area geographically, I'll get it out there, of Palestine called the Negev, the southern desert down by the Dead Sea. Edom, as a nation, live on the east side of the Red Sea. But after the Babylonian captivity and they came back, they occupied the west side, which had been a part of the promised land to the children of Israel. That's where the descendants of Esau were settled back there by Babylon, or by Persia, actually, at the end of the Babylonian captivity. As I already mentioned, in the New Testament times, it was called Idumea, and Herod, the king of the Jews, was actually an Edomite by birth. And the captives of Israel would possess the land of the Edomites. So when the captives of Israel return from the Babylonian captivity, they're going to possess the land that belongs to the Edomites. And then Obadiah concludes that the deliverers will ascend Mount Zion to judge the mountains of Esau, and the kingdom will be the Lord's. So as we look at this fulfillment of Obadiah's prophecy, ultimately when they come back from captivity, the Edomites are going to be a part of the kingdom of the Jews. But there's that prophecy that they will be wiped out. And this is so ironic, it's interesting. Because the Idumeans, which was Edom at the time of Christ, disappeared from history after the fall of Jerusalem to Rome in AD 70. And so here's the irony. In the Old Testament, in the book of Obadiah, Edom was judged for their disregard when Jerusalem was invaded by Judah's enemies and the way they acted. But in reality, the promise is fulfilled in the first century when these descendants of Edom are totally annihilated defending the city of Jerusalem. And they pass from history as what God said. There will be no more Edomites. And God's message is fulfilled, and God's ways are always just, and sometimes they're very fascinating as well as being just. I believe Cliff has the prayer, and we'll be dismissed to our classes.